Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And here we go again. It is 2:30 in the morning, Saturday, June 21st, or is it 22nd? I've lost track. And yesterday was the summer solstice. I don't know about you folks all around the country and all around the world who are listening to me, but it was like 34 degrees here. Sunny, but 34 degrees. Wow. Welcome to summer. I have just a bundle to cover with you this morning, so we're not going to poop around too much. I'm going to start off by telling you just a little bit, because I've been getting loads of emails, loads of messages on Facebook, some calls, also letters in the mail from all sorts of great readers of the Threads Western American Saga series, because the next three books are coming out. In fact, book four in 60 plus or minus days. And I want to go over a couple quick things for all you folks who are also my radio listeners. Number one, if you send me a message on Facebook, on any of our pages, Threads West, Land for Love and Money, On the Right Side Radio, my personal page, it will eventually get answered, but it will be quite a while. I only look at those messages maybe twice a month. If you send a comment to any of the websites, it will be looked at, assuming it's okay. It'll be posted with a response, but that will also take a while. I think there's 72 postings just to the Threads West website pending right now that I need to get to. And then if you send me an email, you'll get a response probably right now within a week to 10 days. If you call me, not a lot of you have my number, but those of you who do, if you call me, you'll get a return call. It'll be somewhere between 3 and 10 days after you call. And the reason for this is not that I'm ignoring you, but I'm running a 20,000-acre ranch complex. I'm trying to get 3 books out the door. I got this radio show, and I got other stuff going on, too. So the only thing I don't have going on is sleep. I don't have any sleep going on. I'm your narcoleptic cowboy author radio host. If I doze off, like while I'm talking to you this morning, then you'll just have to forgive me. That's number one on the books. Number two, I really want to emphasize this. It is, much to my delight and humbled surprise, looking like, even though the first print run of book four, Moccasin Track, it is not plural, folks, not Moccasin Tracks, it's Moccasin Track, the first print run is about 75,000 copies, and it appears that the pre-sales are going to exceed that as of right now, and the publishers and myself have not really started to, well, we haven't started to market it, period. I mean, we just haven't done anything. Been too busy. So if you want to make sure that you get a book, and I know some of you have been waiting, shame on me, for quite some time for book four to come out, I really strongly suggest you go to the Threads West website, www.threadswestseries.com. That's threadswestseries.com. Sign up. You'll get the notices of when the books exactly are coming out, where you can get them, the whole nine yards. And, you know, they'll be available everywhere. But let me tell you that the publisher's list gets satisfied first. And then Barnes & Noble, and then Amazon. That's just the way it works. So if you don't want to be waiting for book four, because the first print run was sold out, and then you have to wait for another print run, I really strongly suggest you go to that website, sign up for the updates, which are very few, and when they come, they have information. And you can also reserve books 4, 5, and 6 for free. The publishers do not charge, unlike every other website, I think, in the planet, where you have to pay when you pre-order a book. This is not a pre-order. It's a reservation. It reserves a book for you. And a week or so before the release, you'll get an email telling you where you can go to get that book, whether they're recommending XYZ Barnes & Noble or their barnesandnoble.com or maybe Amazon or the publisher's website, whatever it happens to be. I really, really strongly suggest you folks do that. Number three on the books. We're going to be forming a little posse. The Threads West posse. We're going to hang them high, which actually kind of, I got to tell you, ties into this show, as you'll see. This is very thematic, this show. The posse are going to be folks who do emailings for us to their email lists when the release comes. And for that, you get all sorts of little bennies and cool stuff. Now, there's nothing to be done on that right now. I'll have some more news for you in future shows. There'll also be information coming out of the website. But it's a pretty cool little deal they got going. And you might want to be thinking about it. Take you about, over the course of the 3 days of the release, it might take you maybe 10 minutes. I mean, literally, 10 minutes. All right. So, that is the news on the books. And I'm very excited, I have to tell you. There's one more thing. The actual book cover. In the book business, you have to be kind of a year in advance. I mean, you have no idea how complicated it is, how detailed it is, and how archaic it is. It's just unbelievable. It's Dark Ages stuff. I'm not sure since the printing press was invented that it's really advanced all that much. But when you want to get a book kind of getting ready to come out in the world, generally the cover is not done. And most of the covers you see that are posted anywhere, whether it's the publisher's website or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or wherever, are not the real final book cover. They are called placeholders, just so you can get something up and get a write-up about the book. And sometime in the next 45 days, the real cover for Book 6, Blood of Glorieta Pass, which we're shooting to get out in December, will be out. And let me tell you, it rocks. I mean, all the covers are great. The artists are great. The graphics are great. The publishers are great. But that cover rocks. That's a Civil War book. So, enough on the books. We're going to go, I'm going to have your story this morning. And the story, by the way, ties right into the theme of this show, which is hang 'em high. Hang 'em high. Yes, Clint would be really proud of this show. And we're going to talk about, first of all, I'm going to give you like a bullet, boom, 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 on some of the headlines that I don't have any time to cover. Many of the articles related to those headlines are posted on the website. On therightsideradio.com, that's on therightsideradio.com for those of you on AM, and for those of you who are listening to the podcast, which is a bunch of you everywhere around the world from the emails I get, go to the website and you can read those articles, because I guarantee you some of these little headlines I'm going to throw at you with maybe a comment are going to pique your interest, but I simply don't have time to cover them. Because this morning we're going to be covering some really important stuff, and it all comes down to treason, and it comes down to voter fraud, and it comes down to what the left, a very well-financed left, as you'll learn tonight, what the left is doing to already gear up to steal the 2020 elections. And when I say 2020 elections, I don't mean just the presidency. I am talking about a repeat of the theft of at least 27 House seats through voter fraud and manipulation and ballot harvesting and all the things I've covered on previous shows in the 2018 midterms. And I also mean a bunch of local elections, including local prosecutors, local judges, state legislatures. The left has a really devious scheme. And as with everything they do, they never go away. I mean, all of us would like to just take a breather, I'm sure, and go, okay, you know, let's kind of just row the canoe and see how the current goes and, you know, make America great again, and we can handle this other stuff later and take a breather and etc. That's not how the left works. The left is incessant. Let me tell you that liberty, that freedom dies, folks, not from a cataclysmic event. It dies from a thousand cuts. That's how liberty dies. And all the things that we see going on out there, the attack on religion, the attack on morality, the attack on speech, the attack on free speech, the attack on the finances of the country and of the citizens of the country, the attack on the Second Amendment, the attack on the Fourth Amendment, the attack on the border, the attack on our laws and the upholding of our laws, the attack on our cohesion as a society, the purposeful division that these so-called Americans bring to the table intentionally to promote their own wealth and power and control. And I can go on. The list is endless. But they are all interrelated. And each one is a series of cuts. And when you get enough cuts, you bleed out. And liberty dies. And they are using, as you'll see this morning, they are using that tactic on our election system, our electoral process, and on the governance of the country from the ground up, from towns and municipalities to the federal government. It's quite frightening, actually, quite frightening. Particularly since we have, and we're going to talk a little bit about this morning too, particularly since we have an education system that they cleverly began to control and almost totally control now from grades 1 through graduate school at colleges, overcharging colleges, I might add, around the country and around the world. So, the other thing we're going to be talking about our friend George Soros, because he ties into this whole deal, you know, kind of like a glove. Kind of like a glove. He's like a glove over the hand of freedom. And the glove is slimy, and the glove is dark, and the glove is anti-freedom. And he has some allies we're going to talk about this morning that you may not be aware of. I'm sure you've heard of the Koch brothers, right? The COCH, the Koch brothers. Huge contributors to the Republican Party in the past. Well, folks, I have always called them into question. I think I was the only guy, you know, to the right of center for the last 5 or 6 years to question their, shall we say, their bona fides, their veracity as conservatives, because these guys aren't conservatives at all, okay? They are to the left of Mitt Romney, who is to conservatism what Attila the Hun was to flowers, okay? Anyway, we're going to be talking about the Koch brothers, because the Koch brothers, believe it or not, this will tittle your whiskers. The Koch brothers have now teamed up with George Soros on some very interesting and diabolical plans to steal the 2020 election. And by the way, not for Republicans, or shall we say, conservatives. And then we're going to talk about, and it's all part of the same deal, how important this pending case is before the Supreme Court on the question on the census form. Now, I have brought this up, I think I started talking about it 2 or 3 years ago, once again, way before, long before anybody else in the media. I have this nasty habit of spotting something way, way, way in advance, because 2 plus 2 is 4 and water runs downhill and I'm just poor old hayseed from Wyoming clinging bitterly to my guns and my religion. 10 teeth, deplorable, smelly Walmart shopper. And sometimes, because I live this simple life, I can actually kind of see through the putrid smoke that these people of all castes and persuasions of both parties like to blow in our faces, hoping either we'll gag, I think that's our first choice, or certainly that we'll be blinded. I think you'll find this morning's show fascinating. and frightening. And I will leave it at that. So why don't we get started here? Let's get started with our story. And our story ties right into the theme which is of the show, which is hang 'em high and hang 'em dead. So this is 1776, and you know, I think it was about 6, 8, 9, 10 months ago, I did one of my stories, and I got a lot of feedback on it. People loved it. They didn't know about it. I did one of my little historical stories on Washington's bodyguard and the plot to assassinate George Washington. And there was indeed a plot. And the history, kind of glosses it over. You know, George Washington was a great man, but George Washington was a man. I mean, he had his stuff going too. And anyway, I want to elaborate on that story I told you, which was kind of just the tale of the assassination plot and its failure. Which by the way, its failure, the culmination of its failure was the dumping of poison peas in a street that some chickens ate and died. Right? The twists of history. Think about it. A plate of peas could have changed the history of the world. It's remarkable. Anyway, there's this guy in 1776. His name is Isaac Ketchum. And he was one of the very first, if not the first, in American jurisprudence, to, shall we say, receive a far lighter sentence than he should have received by ratting on his friends. There's no other way to put this. Anyway, Washington kind of had an early form of Secret Service. It was a supposedly crack team under the command of an Irishman whose name was Thomas Hickey. And he also had a devoted housekeeper by the name of Phoebe, who was the daughter, this is really interesting, of his friend Sam Frances. That's F-R-A-U-N-C-E-S for those of you who like to Google these stories. And he was the owner of Frances Tavern. That was one of George's favorite eating and drinking establishments. So George also had another buddy, Dave Matthews, who was then the mayor of New York, or he thought he had another buddy in Dave. Anyway, Hickey, the guy who was supposedly running this elite crack bodyguard for George Washington, he drank too much, and he gambled too much, and he did some other things too much. And the result was he owed a lot of people a lot of money. He owed taverns money. He owed gambling debts. You know, the guy just was not too stable. And, of course, he was being glib of tongue, a glib Irishman. He was able to kind of cast the cloak so that nobody knew. Although Washington began to suspect prior to the plot unfolding. In any event... he also, by the way, went into counterfeiting. Yes, of course, continental dollars. As Washington started to figure out who Hickey really was, what type of person he was, and as the creditors and folks who held his debts started to press him, many of them, by the way, British sympathizers, the plot came to kill George Washington, which was... Well, there were many different ways they were going to try it, including infiltrating the Continental Army with 700 crack Tory riflemen, pretending to be, you know, erstwhile American patriots who would, in the heat of the proper battle, turn around and, number one, riddle George Washington's body with bullets and then turn around and kill the rest of the Continental, or as many as they could, of the Continental Army around them in the heat of battle, and the British forces would overrun them and the revolution would be over. The other plot was simply to poison George Washington. And the George Washington loved peas. He loved peas. And so the decision by Mr. Hickey was to poison his peas. And the poison was to be applied to peas that George Washington ordered in, that's correct, Francis's Tavern. By the way, unknown to Francis. In any event... when the big moment came, Phoebe, who was Francis's daughter and Washington's housekeeper, became aware of it somehow. History doesn't really tell us how. She warned George. And there are several different accounts. One is that the cook threw the peas out in the alley. The other is that Washington dumped them out the window. In any event, the historians do agree that some chickens ate the peas and keeled over dead, their feet in the air, in about 1 nanosecond. So it was a fairly deadly poison. In any event, Hickey was then arrested, except that they couldn't prove anything. He was very clever. He had covered his tracks. He had made sure everything was being done through surrogates. There was nothing in writing, etc., etc., except for this guy by the name of Ketchum, who was his fellow counterfeiter. And Ketchum at that time was in jail for counterfeiting. Hickey had not been caught, which kind of annoyed Ketchum, shall we say. And in addition, Ketchum was looking at a very, very long stint in a very, very bad prison. If folks think the prisons today are bad, the prisons in 1776 were 100x terrible. So Ketchum goes to the authorities, because during their counterfeiting run of bills or whatever, Hickey had confided his plans in his erstwhile counterfeiting partner. And Ketchum said, "I'll make you a deal. You don't really have anything on Hickey right now, but I'm going to give you the goods. I'm going to tell you where all his skeletons are buried. I'm going to tell you who was in on the plot with him," which included, by the way, Dave Matthews, the mayor of New York that George Washington thought was his friend. "And I'm going to tell you how he planned to kill him, blah, 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 blah." Anyway, so Ketchum spills the beans, or should I say spills the peas, and Hickey is the very first member of the American army to ever be hung for treason. Now, it is a shame, as a prelude to the rest of the show, that that tradition of hanging is still not, shall we say, aggressively pursued. And I think by the end of this show, if you don't already feel that way anyway about certain erstwhile politicians in our midst, after all the previous shows you've listened to, yeah, I think you'll feel differently at the end of this one. So let's begin, shall we? And the first thing I'm going to do is do the rat-a-tat-tat on the just incredible amount of news this week that we just can't even cover. So instead of covering it, we're going to dent it. First of all, I think just yesterday some deal comes out from some gal. You know, this is so getting to be so old. This is such a Democratic playbook, character assassination. So this gal, who just happens to have a book coming out, just happens to be a big Democrat, just happens to have sent lots of money to Democratic causes, she claims that Trump raped her 25 years ago, has never said a word to anybody about it, but is just compelled right now, a year before the 2020 elections, and with her book coming out, to talk about this horrible rape of her body by Donald Trump. And by the way, you ladies who are listening to this, I'm not making fun of it, but, you know, you really need to police your own. There's a lot of bad things that happen to women by bad guys. And I don't mean the locker room talk and all that stuff, because you ladies do that yourselves, as you well know. I'm talking about physical harm, sexual predation, that type of thing. That does occur. And it's women like this. It's women like the women that accuse Judge Kavanaugh. It's women like who accused the team down there. Oh, I think there was 3 or 4 teams and frats that have been accused by women of rapes and gang rapes and all sorts of stuff, all of which came to be absolutely bogus lies for personal gain, for personal vendetta, for power, for money. Yeah, remember that Christie Blasey Ford, who I thought was disgusting human being, She made $1 million off of what she did or tried to do to Judge Kavanaugh. She made $1 million on her GoFundMe. And boy, now she's just gone. Not a peep. She has her $1 million, you know. Anyway, this gal comes out and says Trump raped her, and I'm quoting the news reports now, that he either stuck his penis up me halfway or all the way, I don't know. And that this happened in Bergdorf Goodman or whatever, that's a big department store, big high-end department store, known like by all the elite in New York folks, and that it occurred in a dressing room. And that it occurred because she just ran into Trump, happened chance, in the store. And he asked her to help him buy lingerie for some unknown woman. Very quickly. The department stores come out and said they have no video. They have no evidence whatsoever that this woman and Trump were ever in the store in the same minute, of the same hour, of the same day, of the same year, ever. Number two, I think most women know if they've been penetrated and to what extent. Just my personal opinion. Not did it happen or didn't it happen or how much of it happened, whatever. Number three, this is a big department store. There are lots and lots and lots of people. This is not deserted aisles in a Shopko that's closing down in some small town in the West. And there's not a single witness in this store that teems with customers of this well-known gal who's a writer, and Donald Trump, who is extremely well-known in New York. Not a single corroborating witness. And then we come to, let's see, according to her, she was helping him buy lingerie for another woman, but she doesn't know the woman's name. That's kind of odd. And then this all happened in a dressing room, which means what? She was modeling the lingerie for Trump, if this ever happened, and whatever. And then he pinned her to the wall before he did the, she doesn't know, but something dastardly act. And during all this time, she didn't scream. She didn't shout. Hundreds of people within feet, literally within feet, in a crowded upper-end department store, and no sounds made, no sounds heard. That's all the time I'm going to spend on that nonsense, folks. But, you know, I'm getting pretty tired of it. I assume you are, too. Okay, next thing. Another series of really big court cases, this time about the Second Amendment. The left, like over the cliff left, Supreme Court of Connecticut, I brought you this story about 6 months ago, ruled that, I believe it was Ruger Arms, could be sued by the surviving parents, etc., of Sandy Hook. Never mind that the guy who perpetrated that dastardly deed was psycho. They knew he was psycho. They didn't do anything about it, kind of like the Parkland shooter in Florida. And he was refused. He couldn't buy a gun. He was refused when he tried. And instead, he got the gun from his mother and shot her, by the way, on his way to Sandy Hook to kill those poor kids. Anyway, the firearms industry has long been protected against liability lawsuits, kind of like the tech giants. We're going to talk about them, too. And that's because, you know, the gun doesn't create the crime. It doesn't commit the crime. It's the person. So there's a bunch of challenges to the Connecticut lefty Supreme Court decision that the lawsuit could proceed against Ruger, which is against, like, 200 years of jurisprudence. And let's hope that that gets thrown out. Otherwise, the left will hire lawyers, and they will be funded including by some of the people I'm going to talk about later on in the show, and they will bleed the firearms industry dry. You know, the Second Amendment is great so long as you can get the arms to bear. True the Vote. I love the gal who, she's out of Texas, who has True the Vote. And she wasn't going to go away, you could tell. She sued the hell out of the IRS. It took 10 years. They lied. They cheated. They stole. They hid evidence. They obstructed justice. Lois Lerner is actually sitting in some cushy apartment somewhere, spending our taxpayer money on the pension when she should be in an orange jumpsuit in jail. Or perhaps, like the theme of this particular show, she should just be hung to save us the money. Anyway, True the Vote finally won its battle, its legal battle against the IRS, and the IRS just got reamed by these judges. And they got to pay all the True the Vote's attorney's fees and damages and you name it for the IRS tampering with on purpose, targeting True the Vote as a conservative outfit, one of many, that they wouldn't give tax-exempt status to. While, by the way, they were awarding tax-exempt status in a matter of days to all sorts of left-wing outfits, including a few we're going to speak about later in this attempt to steal the election in 2020. Trump. ICE is going to go after about 1 million illegal aliens who are in this country and who have been denied their asylum requests and never reappeared in court, etc., etc. And the left is going nuts. That's something to bear watching because I think he will expand that. I think he's trying to send a message. He's trying to cut off the flow, the attack on our border at its root. And, you know, if people think they're going to have a big problem getting in, if they think they're going to have to sit in some camp in Mexico for a year waiting, if they think that when they get in, they will be tracked down if they don't show up for court and deported and lose all privileges to ever enter the country again, that would tend to stem the flow. Florida Governor DeSantis. Remember, he only won his election by 33,000 votes. Of course, that was with a bunch of fraud in Broward and Dade counties. He signed a bill down there which banned sanctuary cities in Florida. Good for him. There's several long-time sitting Democratic congressmen, including a 30-year congressman, who is now getting a progressive primary challenger backed by, do we hear the words? Oh, yes, those Justice Democrats. Remember the story that I brought to you? It was 3 or 4 months ago. You can type it in the search bar. Just type in Ocasio-Cortez in the search bar. It'll come up. And I told you about the Justice Democrats who are behind 7 new members of Congress, including Tlaib, Omar Baby, the Bug-Eyed Babe from the Bronx, AOC. And the Justice Democrats have a plan to take over, and they've done a pretty good job, the Democratic Party, and literally make it the, not the Democratic Socialist Party, but the Democratic Communist Party. They're that far left. It seems now that some long-time sitting Democratic congressmen, who are left themselves, but not left enough for these people, are getting challenged in the primaries that are coming up. And I find that rather interesting. By the way, that's how AOC got in, remember? Longtime congressman. Thought he was going to win. Didn't campaign too hard. She wins the election by like 3,000 votes because he sat on his fat duff. And here we are. The source of never-ending amusement and scary ideas. Director Wray of the FBI. Now, once again, I believe I was the very first one in media 2 years ago when he got, like, after his first hearing, within a month of his appointment, I said, this guy's no good. He's a deep state player. He is, you know, a bureaucrat of bureaucrats. He is not crooked like Comey, but he is as biased as Comey. And he is as non-transparent as Comey. And now we find that he is actually resisting his boss, right? That's Attorney General Barr. He's resisting Barr's order to turn over documents. because of for Barr's enforcement of our rule for this show, Hang 'em High. The latest thing that Ray seems to have lost is notes that completely incriminate Peter Strzok and others in the FBI for their treasonous role. Gee, Hang 'em High. Their treasonous role in the Spygate, Russiagate, whatever you want to call it, the nonsense. Okay. There is in Philadelphia. They have arrested several folks, and the media is not covering this at all, with plans to do some pretty bad terror stuff. And I'm going to have more on this in the next few weeks, way more, because acts of terror or attempted acts of terror are way underreported by a press which is left. And I've talked about, and you can put in the search bar, Unholy Alliance. There is an unholy alliance between the left and radical Islam, which the left will rue the day should radical Islam triumph in its wish for a caliphate around the world, because all them non-Muslim, it doesn't matter if you're Christian, it only matters if you're Muslim or not, all those lefties are going to have a really bad day on that day. Senator Hawley, okay, from Missouri, he beat Claire Haskell. Great. I think he's terrific, by the way. He's introducing a bill which will make it okay to sue. I got emails coming in already. To make it okay to sue the tech giants. 30 years ago, I've talked about this on shows too, to try and get this fledgling industry off its feet, Congress passed this law, like protecting them from libel and all sorts of stuff. Hawley is trying to reverse that. I've talked about where big tech is going. You've heard about the censorship of conservative voices. You've heard about the algorithms lifting the stories they want you to read from the writers that they want you to hear it from, and suppressing or eliminating stories and thought by others. More about that later in the show, because it is part of the plan of the left to steal the 2020 election. But anyway, Hawley has introduced this bill. You know, that I sincerely doubt that it will be passed in the House, since big tech supports the Democrats. But nonetheless, it's good to see that something is occurring. Clinton Foundation foreign policy director has decided to be like our friend in the story tonight. He's decided to maybe turn state's evidence against Hillary to save his own neck. Good for him. And bad for her neck, I hope. Gee, once again, thematic. There's a bunch of bad gun laws that are being talked about and passed. And there's some some Illinois state legislature who literally said the day before yesterday that the state police and National Guard should go out and take everybody's guns in Illinois. Psh, good luck on that. Good luck on that. Better not show up at my ranch. All right. Then Washington State, the state of Washington, has now become a sanctuary state. Isn't that nice? So I guess the folks in Washington State can look forward to the same fiscal, needle, feces, typhoid, bubonic plague drain on their treasury that California now faces. You folks up in Washington, congratulations. Biden, you know, he makes a lot of gaffes. And, you know, he's a likable old poop, but scary. I mean, he'd be such a puppet of the left if he was elected. And he came out with this weird thing this week that Democrats should resort to violence if they don't win the election. Look it up. I mean, this is a presidential contender. In fact, right now, the chief presidential contender on the Democratic side, who keeps drifting left and left and left and left and left from his supposedly moderate but always in reality left stance to begin with. And then, our friend Ilhan Omar, you know, the Muslim Congress lady from Obama's Somali refugee camp, known as Minnesota. It seems that she got caught for tax fraud, and she's going to have to repay thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars in back taxes and fraud because she. What you're going to love this, and I've talked about this before, but she was filing as a married couple, which gives you certain tax advantages, at least in certain things, except that she was married to, you're going to love this, her brother, whom she married, quote-unquote, while she was married to another guy, whom she's now married to get the brother into the country. This is your Congress at work, folks. It's just terrific. And then, of course, we have all the stuff on reparations. And once again, I'll toot my horn, beat my drum, sound my cannon. The first, and I mean the first and only person in media to start warning about this reparations thing 3 years ago. I mean, the rest of the media caught on about 2 months ago when these loonies who are running for, God save us, president over on the Democratic side decided that they would try and buy votes with the promise of reparations. Ostensibly, of course, to have justice after all these many years. Oh, yeah. They're very concerned about that. Anyway, there were hearings in the House, which I guess turned into a raucous mess this past week. Sheila Jones, who's almost nuttier than a fruitcake and almost as nutty as Maxine Waters. She had this just gag me speech about, you know, how people, you know, have to pay. And then they had witnesses that said, you know, all white people should write a check because, you know, that's how they get redemption. That's the only way they'll get to heaven. I mean, it's just unbelievable. What they're doing is they're playing the same race guilt, although I think it's so washed up, it doesn't matter. They're playing the same race guilt card that they played to get Barack Obama elected in 2008. And, of course, once he was in power, he was a crook, so he rigged the 2012 election, not to mention Romney was a horrible candidate. So the reparations thing is alive, well, and has a beating heart. And the division that even the topic, even the discussion, which is outrageous. I mean, Mitch McConnell had it right this week when he said nobody alive was or is a slave, and nobody alive was or is a slave owner, period. You could argue, I guess, whether or not the freed slaves back there in 1865 should have gotten something from the federal government. And, in fact, in some ways they did, although the programs were terrible. You know, the 40 acres and a mule and all that stuff. But those days are gone. And the redistribution of wealth from a hated class to a quote-unquote victim class, to keep that class, by the way, thinking they are victims. And when one-third of the class, one-third of blacks in recent surveys said that they don't want anything to do with reparations, it would insult them. It would make them victims without their consent. But, you know, and 66 or 68 or, I mean, some astronomical percentage of Americans think the whole idea is terrible, and that includes a number of Democrats, not the alt-left loons, of course. So reparations is bubbling along, as I told you it would. And, you know, I've done other shows as to what happens after reparations, folks. If we ever get to that point, then the next thing that happens is what I predicted. Then they won't be coming just for your money. They won't be coming just for your property. They will be coming for you. And that is historical. Everywhere in the world, over thousands of years, that this ball has started to roll downhill, if it's not stopped, it winds up at the bottom of the hill squishing a lot of people permanently. Money and property will be the least of your worries, particularly, by the way, if they disarm you in the process, either by subterfuge, i.e. lawsuits against manufacturers of arms companies, so you have the right to bear arms, but you can't get them, or by an attempt to take them from you, very unwise move, or by an attempt to legislate around, through, or over the Second Amendment, also unwise, but, you know. The Democrat communists, because they're not socialists, and the Democrat communist Islamists, who are something even worse, are really smart, but they have no common sense. And in each and everything they do, they overplay their hands. The Russian collusion thing, the IRS thing, the healthcare thing, the Trump is a buffoon thing, the Kavanaugh, you know, gang raping and frat hall thing. Just this week, the Trump in the middle of a crowded department store 25 years ago with absolutely no cooperation, not a single witness, not a single sound, not a single video, not a single picture, nothing, you know, doing his thing in the dressing room to a woman who's never said a word, is trying to sell a book, and uttered no sound during this horrible event. They always go too far. And unfortunately, that's kind of the rank and file Democrat. That's like Shifty Shift and crazy Maxine Waters and despicable Dianne Feinstein. She, by the way, will be in the mix of where we're going with this show. Disgusting Nancy Pelosi and unbelievable Ilhan Omar, Tlaib, AOC, you know, and disgusting Nadler. What's unfortunate is that the people who are funding those fools, they are much smarter. And that's where we're going to go. So the Census Bureau thing, that's one of the key topics I want to talk about this morning. The Census Bureau. Look, this is all about the fundamental transformation of America. This was all set in motion by Obama. Tell you one thing about how he's a deporter-in-chief and do exactly the opposite through illegal executive actions that the judges he has now appointed refuse to allow Trump to reverse. So let's think about this. An executive action that's illegal, and the next president, it's illegal for him to come in to reverse the illegal action. Okay, got that. The alien population, folks, in addition to bringing disease, to exacerbating homelessness, to taking American jobs, to shipping a huge portion of their earnings back out of the country without tax, is changing the face of America, and is particularly changing the face of red America. Take a look at Tlaib being elected in Michigan. Take Dearborn, to be exact. Take a look at Omar being elected in Minnesota with a concentration of Somali refugees in a fairly rural, certainly not overly urban area. Take a look at what's happening in Maine. And I can go all the way down the list. One of the things the census does is to establish how many people are in a place. And the Constitution is pretty specific. It does not say a congressman for every, whatever the number is, 750,000 residents of an area, but a congressman for 750,000, my number may be slightly off, 750,000 citizens of an area. Well, the left has permutated that over the years, from the time they got Lyndon Johnson to drop that question on the census, you know, good old Lyndon, baby. the great society, Lyndon, 12 trillion later, didn't do a thing. And this is changing the face not only of America, the culture, the values, the whole nine yards. I mean, the left kills a lot of birds, a lot of American birds with one stone with immigration, and which they like to do. But it's also it's increasing the number of congressional seats from blue states so that the Democratic communists have more and more power in the legislatures. The legislatures in their states, depending upon how those districts are drawn, and certainly the federal legislature, the Congress. I gave you an example, I think it was 2 months ago, of Oregon adding two congressional seats. Because in the last census, the million or whatever illegal aliens in Oregon were counted. And because they were counted, they are part of the allocation of numbers for representation. This, I can't tell you how dangerous this is. In the meantime, where illegal immigration is low, like red states, Alabama and West Virginia, for instance, they're losing seats. So you have more and more seats in blue areas, sanctuary cities. Gee, John, wonder if there's any. That couldn't be tied in, could it? You know, sanctuary states and sanctuary cities. And less in red states, properly governed, enforce the laws. Which, of course, is tipping the balance of power at the federal level. Louisiana. Let's take a look at Louisiana. Between 2007 and 2017... By the way, Louisiana went 60% for Trump in 2016. Its illegal alien population has grown by a known, simple 15,000. Just 15,000. Increases of hundreds of thousands have been seen in Democrat-controlled states, Massachusetts, Maryland, California, Washington, and Oregon, all of whom have added congressional seats. Let me read this to you. There were five states where unauthorized immigrant populations grew from 2007 to 2017, and 12 where they declined. States with growth included Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Those with declines included five of the six states with the largest unauthorized immigrant populations: California, Florida, Illinois, New Jersey, and New York. Texas did not change. The other states with fewer unauthorized immigrants in 2017 than 2007 were Arizona, Colorado, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, New Mexico, and Oregon. Now, there's a little trick in here. This is done by Pew Research. By the way, Pew is not a right-leaning outfit. And they left out the fact that when they said authorized immigrants, that includes illegal immigrants who have been quote-unquote authorized by the illegal authorizations of the Obama administration. If you put those numbers in the mix, then every single state I just gave you, with the exception of the red states, has seen a dramatic rise. We're talking hundreds of thousands in the case of California, millions of illegal alien, or the increases in illegal alien population. And what the Democrats want to do, not only do they want the voters eventually, that all these illegal immigrants hopefully represent for their future. But in the meantime, they want them, their bodies, their illegal bodies, counted because it gives them more seats in Congress, which gets them closer to passing the laws which would allow these people to vote down the road. Do you see how the circle works? I mean, it's pretty smart, and it's pretty dastardly. To put this in context, folks, California has 5.3 million illegal alien and non-citizen populations. 5.3 million. The U.S. admits 1.5 million legal and illegal immigrants every year. Pew doesn't break this down too well, on purpose, obviously. 70% of, now this is a big one, 70% of the people who come to America, quote-unquote, authorized, but not as citizens, are via chain migration, i.e., one member of a family arrives, is naturalized, or becomes a citizen or a green card holder, and they bring over scores of their relatives down to their fifth cousins, all of which are allowed by our laws, which Obama made easier and easier and easier with illegal executive actions. Gee, what was the theme of this show? Oh, that's right, hang 'em high. Pew, once again, a left-leaning outfit, says that in the next 20 years, the current U.S. legal immigration system will import 15 million new, and they use these words, foreign-born voters. 7 to 8 million of those 15 million, 50%, will arrive here through chain migration. Now, the immigration, the number of bodies, the possible future votes, all that stuff, that's a separate topic. But the growing number of congressional seats from blue states and shrinking number from red states, for all these reasons, can be handled right now with that one question on the census form. Are you a United States citizen? That's why the left is fighting it so hard, and that's why the Supreme Court is so, or the Supreme Court decision is so, so, so important. I mean, critical. We talked last week about Obama's shadow government and his government in exile, and how he and Kerry and Clinton and others of his motley cabal have been out undermining U.S. foreign policy, undermining the security of the United States and its citizens. I gave you a number of examples. If you didn't listen to that show, I suggest you do. The evidence is irrefutable and irrevocable and monumental. And let me add another little brick to that wall of treason. Over the last week, let me step back. 3 weeks ago, I heard through back channels, and there were just a few stories. It's still not been covered. But it seems that the globalist, the previous globalist prime minister of Italy, was a big buddy of Obama's. You know, all these little globalist elitists stick together. And his Secret Service, whatever they call it in Italy, was helping the FBI with their attempts to make sure Trump wasn't elected, and after he was elected, to make sure he was taken out. And when that news came out, even though pretty much ignored by virtually all media in the United States, it caught my interest. And the other thing that caught my interest was this week, particularly after last week's show, where, gee, imagine this. 2 weeks after this stuff kind of leaks out through back channels, here's Barack Obama in Italy having a 2-day private, no record, you name it, meeting with the former Prime Minister of Italy. Gee, what do you think they were discussing? You cover my butt and I'll cover yours? How do we get this globalist show back on the road now that the orange-haired man is throwing a monkey wrench in it? I'm pretty sure we can conjure pretty accurately what their discussion was about. Which brings us, by the way, to the next thing. I would call that foreign influence and interference in the election, wouldn't you? So far we know that Hillary Clinton colluded absolutely, positively, without a doubt, black and white evidence, admissions by Ukrainian, the whole nine yards, with the Ukraine, as did the DNC, as did Obama, to try and influence the 2016 election. We also know that Hillary Clinton, with Obama's tacit blessing, colluded with the Russians through the Steele dossier, Christopher Steele, Fusion GPS. I'm not going to go there tonight. We know that Obama colluded with the Russians. He knew exactly what the Russians were doing. In fact, he was forewarned they were going to do it by Devin Nunes, of all people, in 2014 in a rather massive written report. And he did zippo, nada, nothing, zero. Other than lean over to Dmitry Baby, the so-called president of Russia, in 2012, saying, after this next election, I'll have a lot more latitude. Tell my buddy Vlad that, you know, I can work with him on a lot of stuff because I'm not going to be running again. And, of course, we have Samantha Powers playing all sorts of games at the United Nations. And then we have to influence American elections, I might add, using United Nations money, power, influence, etc. I can go all the way down the list. The left has been colluding with foreign governments to interfere with and affect the outcome of American elections for decades, and particularly over the last two election cycles. And that includes with China. That's a whole nother tale. Now, we find out, because of Spygate, Russiagate, and the Democrats, as usual, went too far. Now we find out, the British, or at least part of the British Secret Service, was in on it. The Italians were in on it. The Macedonians, according to Hillary, were in on it. There were all sorts of people in on this conspiracy, every one of them foreign, and every one of them influencing or affecting United States elections. Yet the Democrats scream and yell about the collusion that wasn't on the part of Donald Trump and Russia. You don't think, as I have said for a long time, you don't think that whole thing was, you know, maybe we can get him out? I mean, it was partly that. But it was mostly, you know, if we raise a big enough stink, we can cover our tracks? Oh, yeah, absolutely. Except the tracks are being brushed off by the dinosaur hunter, Mr. Barr. If you want to hear about foreign influence in elections, let's talk about George Soros. I've done a number of shows on him. I did, just 3-4 months ago, I did a whole kind of historical biography of him for you. I mean, scary dude. Scary dude. Born Jewish, and he's turning Jews over to Nazis and taking their personal possessions. And in interviews saying he thought it was fun, it was the best time of his life. Scary dude. And you wonder why these anti-Semitic congressmen have been elected to Congress? Soros money or Soros foundations. He has 253. I did a show on that too. Type Soros in the search bar. Listen to this. This guy, folks, is public enemy number one. Barack Obama is public enemy 1 1/4. I can't call him 2 because he's in his way, just as nasty as George Soros is in his way. But George, baby, happens to be a multi-billionaire, so he can throw money around and affect stuff. Affect stuff rather significantly, I might add. Let me give you some example of Georgie, and then we're going to talk about the Cox allying with Georgie. So, here's a couple of things that, first of all, George has flooded and is flooding not only elections between Democrats and Republicans at the local, state, county, you name it, level, at the low levels of government, or so-called low levels, but he's also funding alt-left, Islamist sympathizing, anti-Israel, anti-Jew candidates all around the country in small local elections. He is funding primaries, the alt-left challenger to the establishment or the established or the moderate or at least so-called moderate Democrat already in power. In other words, and he's funding, by the way, the Justice Democrats, who now have, they now have 7 people in the United States Congress. That's pretty scary. And they're pretty loud-mouthed, they're obnoxious, and they are loons. I.e., Buckeye Bay from the Bronx, Omar from Minnesota, Tlaib from Michigan, and there are others. Two years ago, Soros put $2 million into the Philadelphia district attorney races. Now look, folks, a race for district attorney, even in a big city, is like, you know, maybe the whole election is a couple $100,000. I mean, a race for prosecutors in rural areas, small towns or small cities, $50,000, $100,000. I mean, maybe there's like $20,000 spent on that campaign. George Soros has been flooding these campaigns with $500,000, $1 million. There's no way that the candidate who is opposite him and his protege, there's no way that they're going to win. There's no way whatsoever. In San Diego, Soros put $1.5 million into that district attorney race. He backed an extreme left-wing gal by the name of Genevieve Jones Wright against the incumbent Summer Steffen. Fortunately, Steffen still won because some money rallied around him too. Soros has a goal, and that is to swing every local prosecutor race in the country to the far left. Because if you control the folks who enforce the laws, in fact, folks, you control the law. Because enforcement then becomes a whim. It should be no surprise that that disgusting excuse for a prosecutor, racist woman, in Philadelphia, the Smollett case, Kim Wright, I believe her name is, she was elected with Soros money. Now that should give you an idea of what kind of impact it has. And if you can control law by what is enforced and what is not enforced, then you can pretty much start controlling districts, voting, voter laws, whether or not illegal aliens vote. It should not surprise you to know that Soros funded virtually all the district attorneys in the San Francisco area, and 2 years later, San Francisco now allows illegal aliens to vote, and does not prosecute. They encourage illegal aliens to vote, and they do not prosecute them if they do. That'll give you now how important this is. This is an offshoot of Soros' plan 15 years ago, and he threw tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars at it to have every secretary of state in all 50 states be beholden to him. And as we're going to discuss here in this segment, it is also one of the reasons, believe it or not, that Republicans couldn't get a wall funded while Paul Ryan was at the helm of the Republican caucus. It explains why many Republicans are less than enthusiastic in their support for Trump. It explains a lot of things. Money does strange things, particularly when there's a lot of it and it's unlimited. All right. So, by the way, Michael Bloomberg is in there with him, and the Cox are in there with him. The Koch brothers are very interesting. Okay, the way the left, let me give you a stratospheric viewpoint here. The way the left is going to steal, or try to steal, and in fact, if we don't get on it, they will steal the 2020 elections on levels from little towns all the way up to the federal government, is number one, to suppress, shall we say, the red vote with fake news, fake polls, suppress the red vote and Trump's message machine through censorship and algorithms and other forms of control of the internet. Number three, by out-and-out voter fraud, the registration and voting of and by illegal aliens, and all the other schemes that I've told you about over the years. Voting in multiple states, voting in multiple elections, dead people voting, dogs voting, you name it. By not purging voting rolls, through ballot harvesting, in other words, the outcome of the election, the Republicans ahead 6%. Well, you know, they keep the election open and they just find ballots and they find more ballots and they find more ballots. And in some states like California, the Democratic Party can actually, it's legal to hire people to go out and collect absentee ballots that, oh, poor Mary forgot to turn in. Now, I don't know about you, but this really pisses me off. And I'm being kind in how I describe how I feel about this. The fact that these people lecture us on democracy makes it all the more abhorrent, gut-wrenching, and puke-inducing. No, I'm not mincing. That's right, Miss Producer. I'm not mincing words this morning. I'm more than annoyed. Let's talk about the Cox, the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers, COCHS, you Google them up. They're billionaires. They're businessmen. They employ 60, 70,000 people around the United States. They have long supported Republican causes. In fact, they're probably the largest single donor to Republican races of virtually anyone, at any time, anywhere. However, the Koch brothers are not conservative, like most people think they are. And the Koch brothers do not support many of the planks of the Republican Party that you would think they would. In fact, let me tell you where the Kochs stand on certain things. They believe in amnesty. If you are here in this country, you should get amnesty. And by the way, you should vote. They do not believe in a border wall. They believe in open borders. Remember, these guys are funding Republicans, folks. They believe in cuts to Social Security and Medicare. They believe that government should stay totally out of trying to lower prescription drug prices. They believe that usury, that is the limitations on interest rates that can be charged, like by credit card companies and other sharks, that usury should be abolished. There should be no limit on interest rates and what people can charge for capital. And they are absolutely, as we're going to be segue into, because it's all part of the same plan, they're absolutely against free speech. Absolutely. This is the money that has been funding Republicans, folks. Is there any wonder why some Republicans think impeachment's a good idea? Why many Republicans wouldn't vote for the wall? Why Paul Ryan, who got a lot of Koch brothers money, didn't even bring up the wall for a vote or immigration for a vote. I can go on down the list. Why do you think the internet companies who have been playing their games since before 2016 are now blatant about it? You know, if you're a conservative and you say something that's hate speech, you're banned. You're deplatformed. In the meantime, Louis Farrakhan can spew anti-Semitic rhetoric. Left-wing politicians and other celebrities can talk about assassination, you name it. And they are moved to the top of the list, the first thing you read by the tech giants' algorithms. All right, well, we're going to get more into that here in just a bit. By the way, some other things that the Koch brothers, you know, those big champions of Republicans believe. They believe that the correction and sentencing laws should be, like, almost eliminated. Like, almost nobody should go to jail, which is a libertarian concept. They believe that drugs should be legalized or drug laws should not be enforced. This, of course, is in the middle of the biggest drug overdose, drug death problem this country has ever had. So, the Koch brothers, folks, are not your friends, nor are they friends of conservatives, nor are they friends of the Republican Party. I'm not even sure the Republicans are friends of the Republican Party. The Koch brothers, to give you a metaphor, are the Trojan horse of the left. How clever they are, and they are. The Koch brothers have been funding Republican candidates to control their vote, to suppress the opposition of the Republicans, i.e. supposed conservatives, to the alt-left whims of the communist Democrats. And they've been doing it for about 20 years. Well, now, just like Trump has been so good at getting everybody else out of the closet, all this stuff we heard whispers about before is now like in your face, undeniable. Well, you know, he's done the same thing with the Koch brothers, because now the Koch brothers are coming out and talking about their policies. They are arm-twisting in broad daylight, and they are partnering, you'll love this, with George Soros to restrict free speech on the Internet. In fact, to restrict free speech. I mean, the First Amendment, who cares about that? Let me give you an example. So there's a, and by the way, their name is Charles and David Koch. July 17th, that was last year, July 17th last year, they formed a project called the Charlottesville Project. Remember the whole Charlottesville thing and the supposed right-wing KKK, blah, 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 which the left improperly tries to throw up as a red flag about Trump. Well, last year, this Charlottesville Project, they had a big gathering in Missouri. And the focus of this year's summit, and this was to kind of get organized, the focus of this year's summit will involve, quote, private tech sector and best practices for the fight against hate and extremism online. That's according to the event's own press release, by the way, folks. Quote, representatives for the Charles Koch Institute and the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, will join executives from tech companies, which currently include Eventbrite, Mozilla, Pinterest, Patreon, and Airbnb. Actually, folks, it also includes Google, Verizon, Twitter, Pinterest, and others. And this funding by the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, absolutely alt-left hate group that Facebook uses to to call out conservative voices on Facebook, will be funded, as will this Charlottesville initiative, the Charlottesville Project, by a combination of Soros and Koch brothers money. In other words, your Republican donors are now contributing to the mechanism to shut down your free speech. And you wonder why you have rhinos in Congress? Really? Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Ties right in with my story, right? There you had the spy within the spy. You had the turncoat traitors. You had who you thought you could trust. And they turned out to be something exactly opposite. Hopefully the fate of the perps in the George Washington story will be similar to the fate of the perps in the modern day America story. The event, by the way, this Charlottesville initiative, is sponsored by Comcast NBC Universal. Gee, now there's a right-wing outfit for you. The Cressets Foundation and, you'll love this, the Soros Fund Charitable Foundation. And it, quote, intends to exploit the tragedy of Charlottesville to push for even more Orwellian censorship. That's from Big League Politics, by the way. Pretty well-respected firm. Okay. So we have George Soros, and we have the Kochs, and we have Bloomberg. And we have their newfound interest in censorship and kneecapping the First Amendment. They are all against the Second Amendment. I mean, like, rabidly against the Second Amendment. Bloomberg leading that part of the pack. Let me give you some example of what Soros is doing. I gave you just a few before. So there were, like, let's take two local elections in Northern Virginia. Fairfax County, Virginia. He throws money at the challenger to the Democrat incumbent. The Democrat incumbent, who, by the way, was an experienced prosecutor, had a decent record, at least for a Democrat. And she campaigned hard. She raised $191,000, which is actually a lot of money for a campaign like that. It was all through individual contributions and locals. Soros, his puppet that was running against the Democrat incumbent, only raised the this challenger only raised $46,000 from individual contributions. But Daddy Soros was there with the purse. He put $700,000 into this one little local county election in one state in the union, and of course blew the incumbent out of the water, who was pretty well financed for this type of race. He accounted for 96% of all campaign funding by the challenger. 96%. Primetime TV ads, which, by the way, are very expensive. Massive local media coverage, etc., etc. By the way, Soros, who's a foreign national, folks, not an American citizen, and weren't the Democrats complaining about foreign collusion and foreign influence in our elections? Huh, imagine that. He lives in New York. He doesn't live in Virginia. So there was no, like, he didn't care deeply about the local stuff, so to speak. The new prosecutor that he put in charge plans to eliminate drug possession charges completely, and institute another series of "we'll enforce the law that we want," "we'll create the law that we want," "we will enforce the law that we wish, mostly against people we don't like, and we will not enforce the laws, despite horrible repercussions to the population we serve, of laws we don't like." That is what Soros is doing. That's the type of people he's putting in. By the way, the new prosecutor that he got elected, I'm just using this one election. Remember, he's involved in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds around the country, throwing money at them like this. This new prosecutor wants to get rid of cash bail, wants to get rid of the death penalty. And, gee, big surprise, they want to restore voting rights to 200,000 Virginia felons. You know, fundamental transformation, folks. Fundamental transformation. So Soros and the folks he works with has found a way, he's found a loophole to circumvent local, and in this case, Virginia laws. The prosecutor that he got elected, her aims are outright illegal. Illegal. And the election funding, if not illegal, unethical. So, anyway. Kim Fox. The Jussie Smollett case. She is a Soros devotee because it was Soros donations that got her elected. Same type of deal as what I just explained to you in Virginia. And by the way, she was also good friends with Obama, who, by the way, is good friends with Soros, who, by the way, was the most frequent visitor to the Obama White House, I've told you this before, 88 visits to the Obama White House over 8 years. Gee, and they didn't go out and play golf once. I wonder what they were talking about. There is there's something else I want to share with you here. Okay. Soros has also emerged. This is just in the last 2 weeks. This is still back channel stuff. I'm going to go into it more next week because this is really about influence in an election, yes, but it's about trying to overturn an election that you lose, which, of course, is what happened with the Trump-Russia collusion, Mueller, you name it. We're not going there this morning. But I'm going to talk about next week where else this dark money from Soros and Cox and Bloomberg, but particularly Soros, where else this is going. And it will not surprise you, I'm going to give you a little tickler here, it will not surprise you to know that there is a thing called the Democratic Integrity Project, TDIP, who was founded by a gentleman by the name of Daniel Jones, who, believe it or not, gee, what a coincidence, was a former top staffer to Dianne Feinstein, the Democratic senator from California. You know, Feinstein, who played the dirty Kavanaugh trick, last-minute stuff. It's organized, you're going to love this, as a Washington-based nonprofit approved by the IRS that didn't approve conservative True the Vote. Don't you just love this stuff? It's great. And it appears that Soros, through various sources, is the primary funder of this group. And this group is dedicated to one thing, making the Russian collusion story and anything else they can dig up and make stick against Donald Trump for impeachment purposes, or if that doesn't work, election purposes, or if that doesn't work, send him to jail purposes, who knows. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that next week, because George Soros is like the perfect, I'm looking at some more stuff here. Yeah, George Soros is like he's like the poster boy, okay? George Soros is kind of the wealthy Hickey. Remember who Hickey was, right? The guy who ran the Secret Service detail for George Washington. And in my opinion, folks, George Soros should be investigated, indicted, at least put in prison, or preferably perhaps treated in the old-fashioned, time and true, proven method, as Mr. Hickey was in my little historical story. Last thing, and actually, we're just about to run over and stations will be screaming. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to put this back to next week. I got an email from a gentleman by the name of Mike. I'm not going to give his last name. Southern Wyoming. One of my very first listeners. When I first started this whole radio thing, on KGAB 650 down in Cheyenne. Big station. I mean, they go all over. I get mail from Denver from them. And Mike started listening to me sometime around then. And he's had two terrific ideas for shows that we are definitely going to do. Don't have time to talk about this tonight, but they are coming up. So next week, folks, we're going to be talking about, once again, this Democratic plan to steal the 2020 election, the continuing Democratic plan, all financed by Koch, Soros, Bloomberg, you name it, particularly Soros, to try and impeach or unelect Donald Trump. In other words, this all has to do with power and control. And we're going to talk more about what they are doing in a very clever strategy, unfortunately, to tip things at the local level. Eric Holder trying to redistrict states, and quite successfully, unfortunately. At the same time, the electoral process, which we've talked about, and the sanctuary states, which draw in illegals, ostensibly because they really care about them, you know, and their fellow human beings, but which gives them more congressional seats. And we're going to talk about education next week. And I'm going to tell you some things that are going on that are actually in a dismal, dismal night, a black night in education, which is what it is right now for conservatives, there are some glimmers of light. And I'll have some amazing stories for you, and I'll tell you about this group that is probably the forerunner, in the forefront of turning around young kids' minds, millennial minds, in colleges and universities around the country. And they need your support. So, and we're also going to talk about immigration next week, too. One of the things being a judge who rules, you'll love this. This is an Obama-appointed judge. Gee, what a big surprise. Judge rules illegal alien who used fake documents to get driver's license committed no crime. Okay, cool. That'll give you an idea of the whole line of next week's show on immigration. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.